Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Big Interview with Graham Hunter. This is our monthly Q&A show. I'm Neil White, and on the line from Spain, we have Graham Hunter, the host of the Big Interview with Graham Hunter, and Pete Jensen from La Liga Television. Good morning, chaps. They are here to answer questions sent to us by our beloved socios, those listeners who support us at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. They get everything first, and they get to put their questions to the guys for the shows that we do like this every month. This is part one of a two-parter, and in this first part, we are going to focus on the Champions League semi-finals, the first legs of which took place last week, and the second legs of which, as you listen to this, are coming up very, very soon. So we're going to jump straight in with a question from socio Chris Hennigan. Chris, hi, thank you for your question. Chris says, contrary to some of the negative criticism by the British media around Villarreal's performance against my team, Liverpool, I was quietly impressed by how Emery set up the team and executed his strategy despite missing key players. The tie is certainly not over, so I was wondering what you both thought Emery had to do to deliver another memorable night. Thank you as ever, Chris the Dancer Hennigan. So thank you, Dancer. Let's start with Graham. Graham, did you share Chris's positivity around the performance of Villarreal last week?
No, listen, Dancer, for what it's not often that I'll go straight from your point of view, but no, I have to be a little tributary of the main Dancer River. That wasn't a proper Villarreal performance, irrespective of the fact that under fire they showed bravery. And that's got to mention in dispatches. It's a fact that what happened? Barcelona were beaten there 4-0. There were chances, I thought, for Villarreal to be spanked and to be out of the tie. And in the end, the fact that they weren't allowed a series of their players to make quite brash promises about it will be completely different in the second leg. And instead of just braggadocio, they talked about we will play differently. We will be better than we were. This tie is still alive, all that kind of stuff. I don't think it is. And I think that what we saw, no, I don't think, I'm certain that what we saw was a performance by your team, Chris, that exactly joined the dots of where Juventus and Bayern Munich had failed. When Villarreal went into those two ties, much as last season when they went into the Arsenal and Manchester United ties, their one main weapon, and to riff on a theme that we've had this morning already, before we recorded, was that they were really parsimonious with the ball. They didn't allow fear and surprise to overtake them because they didn't give the ball away. They were extremely clever in how they moved as a unit, basculación they call it here in Spain, which just means Scott Minto and Risa, when challenged to explain basculación, said, oh, it's shuffling across. Yet more language deficit between Spanish football and English football. But basculación means that, you know, it's about equilibrium in the scales and the weights, so that if a team is trying to overload you, you move across, but everybody moves in unison, both laterally and vertically. And neither Juventus nor Bayern Munich in the two previous ties to Anfield, in really in almost any of the four matches of the two previous ties, had that tempest pace that meant that, you know, in Bavaria, Bayern Munich were on top, but they weren't creating clear-cut chances. They eventually only drew 1-1, and Villarreal were never out of the comfort zone. In neither of the events games, even when La Vecchia went up 1-0 in about 2 minutes, thanks to Vlahovic, Villarreal were no time out of the comfort zone. So what I saw at Anfield personally, and it's time for Pete, who's usually got a more considered view than me, but what I saw at Villarreal was a team clinging on. At Villarreal at Anfield was a team clinging on. I genuinely thought that the relentless pace at which Liverpool did things and did things well, both when they were pressing Villarreal in the rare times they had the ball, and then when Liverpool themselves had the ball, it was distinctly different from the tests that Villarreal had passed against nominally, you know, two sides that in theory should have been able to do the same to them as Liverpool did. So I thought that they weren't waving, they were drowning. I think that several of their players dropped their level a little bit. And Chris, to be honest with you, the only regrets you've got travelling to Spain's Eastern Mediterranean coast was that while I think you tuck the tie away tomorrow, as we record, I think they did enough, and I think Villarreal aren't going to be in their debut Champions League final, I'm afraid to say.
Pete, Chris asks if there is a way back, if there's anything Emery and Villarreal can do. What do you think?
Well, the best chance of there being a way back is that Gerard Moreno's fit, because I think some of the people that criticise Villarreal in England are not really aware of just how important Gerard Moreno is to Villarreal. He's their Benzema. He scores the big goals, but he also makes them play. And he would have helped them keep the ball, which they were unable to do at Anfield. And bearing in mind the player who would have played in his place because he was injured, Jeremy Pino was also out as well. So I think in view of those two huge absences, 2-0 was as good as it was, as good a result as possible. I don't think they're going to come back. Gerard Moreno is clearly not properly fit. It's muscle problems. There's a suggestion that Dan Juma also has slight muscle problems. Coquelin wasn't fit in the game, and he's not going to have miraculously recovered it for the second leg. And Pino's problem is also muscular. Albiol will be patched up and sent out, and he'll be okay, I'm sure. But they're a team that rely on hurting teams on the counter attack, and they can't do that without their best strikers. I thought the criticism of Emery was completely unfair, because I didn't think he set up to get a first leg 0-0, which is exactly what Simeone did against City. So it was completely different. It wasn't the same at all. The plan was, and he was brave with his team selection, I thought, because he could have played an extra midfield player. He could have played Trigueros and left Dan Juma up front on his own. He didn't do that. He went with Chukwueze and Dan Juma. The plan, I'm sure, was to try and hurt Liverpool, to run in behind Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, but they were just completely monstered. And players have spoken about the intensity of Liverpool. I interviewed Ceballos a couple of years ago when he was... Where was he on loan? At Arsenal. You know, we spoke to him, asked him about the intensity of the Premier League, and he just said Liverpool is just another level on top of the intensity of the teams in the Premier League. And you just come off the pitch and you can't breathe. I thought Liverpool were brilliant, and they weren't as ruthless as we've seen them be in other games. But I don't think that's going to be a problem going into the second leg, barring the miraculous recovery of all those players. And the other thing, of course, is the Ceramica is not a cauldron. I've seen one headline this morning that, you know, it'll be a cauldron on Tuesday night. It won't be a cauldron on Tuesday night. It's never going to be a cauldron. And, you know, that also will help Liverpool over the line and into the final.
Chris, Pete's point is that there's nobody in La Liga that Villarreal have practiced against that play anything like that. And to echo Pete and Ceballos's, Dani Ceballos's point, pre-match, there was a big, there's a page interview with Raul Albiol, and his best quote was, "There is no level above Liverpool in how they play." And it, I think it just, it was, they had, VRL simply hadn't experienced that. Since the last time they were at Anfield when they lost 3-0, I think there was one player that repeated in the 11, and it had been a different coach obviously then. So if you never experienced that, and Pete's talked about how, you know, they're caught breathless, they didn't have time to think, they were jutted out of their rhythm, there was no out ball that could hold things up. We're both sounding a little bit negative, Chris, but I think the large part of it is neither Peter nor I bet you have lost any respect for Villarreal, how they plan, how technically good their players are, the fact that they deserve to beat both Bayern Munich and Juventus and Arsenal and Manchester United. The fact is Liverpool are up or wrong.
So the second socio that we have a question from, Dr. Robert McIntosh, hello doctor, does draw a bridge between the performances of Atleti and Villarreal. Dogged, structured, disciplined. Pete, you were careful there to make a distinction between those two. But the question that Robert has does kind of cover both of them. He says, how are teams like Villarreal and Atleti perceived in Spain? I guess he means when they go perhaps away to the bigger teams in Europe and play with that kind of strategy, that kind of game. Are they derided as a George Graham boring Arsenal team would have been? Or are they appreciated as being tactically astute competitors?
Bobby Mack, I think there's almost no relationship between how Villarreal want to play and how Atleti play at their most dogged and doer, except for the fact that Unai Emery definitely has a tick, which is that this sentiment is of, I interviewed him recently and he was like, look, one of my basic ethos is that if you can avoid losing, avoid losing. And it might sound pedantic to talk about the difference between that and coaches who are like, we win. You know, we go out to win. Coaches who in the last 20 minutes, if they're 1-0 up, will look for a second and a third. Coaches who, if they've got a creditable 1-1 against a big rival, will say, this'll do. This will do nicely. Coaches who, then this is not predominant, this is a theme in La Liga that I think barely exists in the Premier League in England. Coaches who, and this was a famous accusation of Mourinho when he first joined Real Madrid in 2010, coaches who go to a big ground because they've got a rival the following week that they think that they can chew into, and they'll rest key players and they'll take a 3 or 4-0 as long as there's no bookings and no injuries. And you know, that idea has diminished, but it does exist. And Unai Emery comes from a school whereby, irrespective of his massive success and the fact that he's got a tremendously acute tactical mind, and if you've watched him, although he's a blunt instrument rather than a rapier in terms of how he coaches, It's all about repeat. It's not like a blinding moments of clarity that he slices through and gets into a player's mind and everybody understands. It's do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again. He's very much 1950s, 1960s British reading, writing, arithmetic by rote. Not to deny any of that talent, he's quite a conservative coach, and therefore, when you saw Villarreal, and Pete and I are testifying, clinging on, their idea wasn't to go out and in any way replicate what Atleti did. The idea of Villarreal was to try and, you know, blunt Liverpool, to take the ball from them, to make them chase around, and to come away with a draw, goals or no goals, you know, irrelevant to them now that the UEFA have mistakenly taken away their away goals counting double in the event of a draw. They just couldn't. And, you know, Robert, seeing as you mentioned that, I have to be really critical of Cholo Simeone. He came within, you know, let's say 6 or 7 good minutes at the end of the second tie, whereby not only did they nearly score to take it in extra time, there was a spell of somewhere in the region of 10 to 15 minutes when Atleti not only had the upper hand in the second leg, second half, but they brought on Carrasco, brought in Correa, and they went front foot. And it was, listen, I'm always, apart from the dandies are playing, of the school of may the better team win, always. So I wasn't sort of pulling for Atleti. It wasn't, you know, essential to me that they won, but they're so refreshing to watch when they go front foot. There's so much ability in that squad and in that team that, you know, to accuse Cholo Simeone of mismanaging it would be wrong, but I think he's too comfortable. I think he's infected by the Arsene Wenger gene of it's a big trophy to be qualifying for the top four. Last season they won it. They won it, and to some extent it was in a dearth of really elite competition. They won it. You can't strip that value away from them. They did it with parts of the game that were quite impressive. But there's been a real dilution of the Cholo Simeone value and effect, except for economically, where if he keeps taking them through the group and into a couple of knockout rounds, they'll be 70, 75 million up on this season. Okay, gross costs to come off it, but the UEFA will pay them, I'll bet you, somewhere in the region of 75 million for this. That used to be the winner's share. And the people that employ him pay him the big money because they're willing to accept his sometimes idiosyncratic tactics, like playing Griezmann at right midfield in the second leg when you're only 1-0 down from the first leg, when you set up, you know, to be a successful Maginot line. I didn't approve of it. I thought he got it wrong, and they're really, you Robert was trying to draw a parallel between Villarreal and Atleti. Their really big test for Simeone would come this season if they weren't to qualify top four. Because it's his continuity is predicated on him raking in, you know, 70 plus million every year for them. And if he doesn't put them in a position to do that, yeah, I'd be really interested to find out what his contract says.
Pete Robert also mentions the sort of perception of those two teams at home. Like, just specifically on that quote that you mentioned from Dani Ceballos, the football media in Spain kind of share that opinion that, hang on a second, we're up against a quite spectacular team, and maybe we go into this as strong underdogs, or the Liverpool are an outrageous favourite for this tie. Is that kind of part of the storytelling in Spain?
Well, in terms of the perception, first of all, no one thinks Villarreal are a negative side in Spain. They've scored more goals than anyone at home this season, apart from Real Madrid. So no one thinks that. Atletico Madrid, Simeone is criticised for being too negative. In their last six games, they failed to score in five of them, which is just incredible when you think about the attacking quality that he has in his squad, and he has had this season. The incredible thing about the game against Man City was the way that it was perceived as being this sort of brave defeat, you know, glorious, almost, we deserve more. You could accept that from the Atletico fans. You know, loyalty and defeat is a quality in a supporter, and the way that the reception that they gave the team at the end of the game was magnificent, despite the fact they'd gone out. But you couldn't understand it from the rest of Spain, and there were, you know, seasoned, respected commentators saying things like, well, they couldn't have done anything more. Well, they could have done much more. They could have crossed the halfway line in the first leg. Simeone set them up very similar to the way Jose Mourinho set Real Madrid up against Barcelona in the Champions League semi-final, when it was still obviously the away leg rule, the away goals rule. And he wanted a 0-0 in the first game, and he wanted to go with that, with the away goals in his favour, to the Camp Nou in the second leg. And it worked until Pepe kicks Dani Alves up in the air, Real Madrid go down to 10 men, and Messi scores twice. And if it doesn't work, you have to accept it, and you have to say, well, that was the decision we made tactically, and it didn't come off. And that was the story of the Man City Atletico Madrid game. They tried to draw the first leg 0-0. They didn't achieve that goal. And they tried to win the second leg turning on in the second half, and maybe getting one, two goals, you know, in the second 45 minutes and in extra time if necessary. And it didn't work. Manchester City showed them how to get a 0-0 draw in the second leg. So the plan failed. I've got no problem with Simeone lining up the way he lines up because it's been massively successful in the last decade. But when he says things like, well, we sort of had to do that because we're up against Manchester City. Hang on a minute. You've got Griezmann and João Felix, who would probably get in the Manchester City team or would certainly be playing more often than not playing. You've got people like Marcus Llorente and maybe even Rodrigo de Paul, who, if they were Guardiola players, they'd be used regularly. So this is not a story of a team who wouldn't get a single player in the Manchester City 11. After Real Madrid played against City and obviously came away with the same margin, trailing by one goal, there were Atletico Madrid supporters saying, well, this justifies Simeone. No, it doesn't. It shows that if you attack City, you can score against them. And are you really saying you'd rather lose 1-0 than, was it 3-2 or 4-3? I can't remember. So in terms of the perception, I think he gets away with it. He gets away with this this narrative of, you know, we're the brave battling, we take it to the 94th minute of every game, and there's a huge deficit in the ideas they have going forward, and that is clear to see in the fact that, as I say, in their last six games, in five of them, they haven't scored.
We're going to move on now to a question from our sponsors at Bet365, who mention a player, Pete, that you've already mentioned on the show this morning. Did the Premier League sides miss a trick by not luring Arnaud Danjuma from Bournemouth after his season in the Championship? Could he be key for Villarreal's chances of getting back into the tie? Well, it sounds like the answer to the second part is no, if his muscle injury is as serious as you suggest it is, Pete. But just if we break it away from his impact in the second leg of the semi-final and just get a little breakdown for people that haven't been following Villarreal of how he's done since his summer move. I think it was around 23 million euros from Bournemouth. A good bit of recruitment. I think he's in double figures for the season already. How has he been playing?
He's been playing fantastically well. By the way, we're not writing him off to play tomorrow night. I mean, I'm just reading that he hasn't trained with the rest of the team this morning, along with Coquelin and Gerard Moreno and Albiol and Jeremy Pino. It may well be that he makes the game. Let's hope he does. He's had a fantastic season. Was it 17 goals in the Championship with Bournemouth? Yeah, those Premier League teams should have been looking at him. Villarreal were very smart in the transfer market. One of the best things about him is his attitude, because He believes that he's going to get better and better and better. He wants to sort of morph into the Cristiano Ronaldo type central scoring striker. He doesn't want to, you know, spend the rest of his career as a winger. He wants to make that same transition that Ronaldo made and Henry before he made. And, you know, the goals this season suggest that he can do that. So he's been one of the best signings of the season anywhere in La Liga.
Graham, you wrote a fantastic column and recorded it as well for our listeners. I'm sure all of you have listened to that already, about Villarreal in general. And I guess this is a good example of how recruitment is part of their secret sauce.
Has been for an awfully long time. You know, it shocked people rigid that when Diego Forlan left Manchester United, he was able to be given better wages at Villarreal. Now, that was in a time before La Liga financial fair play was as stringent as it is now, and one of the points I tried to make in the column is that when you talk about their owner, although he now says that Villarreal are a self-sustaining club, and if they keep playing at this level in the Champions League, that will be true. It's Villarreal, the town and the club, that are the little kids on the block. It's not their owner, because he's a billionaire. But being first off the block when Louis van Gaal went to Wijndrom and Riquelme and said to him face to face, you know, I didn't sign you, I don't want you. I've just taken over. You're free to go, find yourself a club. He didn't have to pick up the phone, nor did his agent. Villarreal were first on the phone, got Wijndrom and Riquelme. He played some of the best football of his career, although Boca fans would say that it was in their jersey that he absolutely peaked, but he did play some of the best football of his career at the Madrigal, and they found him, you know, they bought him a big mansion that he rattled around in and said, I hate this. Give me a little apartment in town, please. Just give me a little apartment in a block in town so I can, you know, smell the beer and the cigarettes and see the people and lean out my window You know, that's happened before. I lived in a little village where Alex Ferguson was in a tiny, tiny semi-detached house and was starting to do well at Aberdeen and had aspirations to a bigger, grander mansion. And it was a mansion on the main road, and bought it, moved down there. And his wife, Kathy, who was used to, you know, tenement closes when she was growing up and having neighbours when she first moved to Colson, after 7 or 8 weeks in the big mansion rattling around, she said to Alec Ferguson, "This is rubbish, we're moving back." And he had to abandon his big mansion, which he sold at a loss, and moved back to the house that they'd not been able to sell. And Raquelme had a similar idea, and VRL went, "Yeah, no, fine, no problem, I understand completely." And again and again, I think Villarreal have been a club that scout well in terms of A, recognising talent potential, and B, presenting a very attractive package of what life in Castellón or Villarreal or Benicassim will be like. And, you know, initially you would say, well, it's hard to market a tiny little, because even if you include Castellón, it's a pretty small backwater. It's a very industrial place. It's not a particularly pretty part of Spain. Beautiful weather, nice people. You're part of a Bournemouth project. You know, this is Bournemouth with sun. But what they do is they make sure, or they have successfully made sure so far across a couple of different eras. They've lost Yanesa was the guy who persuaded Fernando Roig to buy in 1997. Currently has leukemia. Get well soon. His hard work rather than his talent spotting made a bedrock of contractual offers to players that were like, wow, yeah, we'll take this. And Fernando Roig's son, also Fernando, is now the key man. He's the man that appointed Unai Emery, rather than his father, who's still the figurehead, who's still a big voice, still on the board, still only mid-70s. I think that, you know, they lost a technical secretary to, pretty sure, Mallorca. So they've had to keep renewing the means by which they are an elite scouting unit. And Danjuma looks to me like a player who they'll do well to keep another season if the price is right, because they're not quite like Sevilla, where they're an automatic selling club. They do have, because of the Roig family, billions. They do have the means to say to people, we'll make it worth your while staying. And they contractually, they try to get ahead of the curve and usually manage it. Think of, again, why it was Villarreal that Robert Pires chose to go to after Arsenal, after losing that Champions League final, and having put Villarreal out. They are elite in terms of saying, this will be a good footballing life for you, and it will be a good life for your family too. They are elite in terms of that. But Danjuma is so good, he's playing so well for the national team as well, that they will get an offer whereby they will easily treble their money if they want to. This summer, I'm not convinced, but if he continues in this trajectory by next summer, they'll have a massive decision about whether they vastly increase his contract, persuade him that trophies will come by staying, or whether they sell for easily 60 plus.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be back very soon with more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back with a question from Socio Ian Boddy. Might be a quick one, this one. Now, who to go to for linguistic matters? Let's try Pete Jensen. What were Pep's motives for saying at the end of his post-match interview with Movistar that he hoped he hadn't been too arisco? Why did I say that in Italian? Was he hoping to antagonise the Madrid crowd for the return leg? And if so, why?
Arisco, indeed. What does it mean? Arisco, wordreference.com. unsociable, unfriendly, dour, fierce, gruff, or unfriendly. He doesn't have a great relationship with the Spanish media for three reasons, really. One, because he led Barcelona to so many trophies. Secondly, because what was the phrase once used against him, Graham, that he pisses cologne, or which basically, I suppose, is a sort of Spanish version of his shit doesn't smell, or whatever phrase you want to use. So they think that he looks down on the rest of football, which I think is very unfair. I think he always bends over backwards not to say that his style is necessarily superior. I think those that follow him, I think his disciples, don't do him any favours by suggesting exactly that all the time, and that works against him. The third reason is a political one, and we don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I think he believes in an independent Catalonia, and that upsets a lot of people in Spain. So he's not hugely popular, and he did everything he could after the first leg not to say, you know, I mean, really, 5-5-0, Simeone's tactics. And he just slipped in one word, didn't he? And it was the word prehistory. And he didn't say Simeone's tactics were prehistoric. He actually said, you know, it's always been hard to beat teams that play two banks of five. It has been that way since prehistory. So the word was clearly in his mind. He was clearly trying not to say prehistoric, and he ended up saying prehistory. So that ran into the second leg. And he felt that the Spanish journalists were trying to take him down that road again of saying that his style is better than any other style. And he was very short and not particularly friendly, including in the post-match pitch side interview with Ricardo Sierra, who's a top professional and by all accounts a nice guy. And didn't deserve probably the one word answers that Pep was giving him. And while the press conference was going on, I was listening to Spanish radio, and the guy working for COPE, which is a Spanish radio station, is in the press conference, and he's being told by the presenter of the late night show, ask him why he's being so surly. And so when his question turn came, I think he was one of those who asked why the other. And I'm not sure if the Arisco thing was a response to that, or if he was then asked again. But they asked Guardiola, you know, what's the problem? But the problem, they know what the problem is, and it's long term, and it is going to, and they'll try and whip it up ahead of the second leg. They'll try and use that in Real Madrid's favour without any doubt.
But they also, just a clinical explanation for Peter. I was in that press conference, and there was one, I think a written journalist who said to Guardiola about, you know, the comments after the first leg, and Guardiola just leaned in. Simon Heggie, his comms, or the division comms chief for the City Group, was there, and he leaned in and went, let me make it clear. All the stuff that you've represented me as saying, I didn't say. I was saying, just as Pete explained, it was like, it's been eternally difficult if you're playing against two banks of five men. Get it right. Stop saying I said anything differently. And he went on the front foot in the attack. And for whatever reason, they chose to do it. I think, Pete, it was Radio Marca, brought Ricardo Sierra in for, an autopsy, where there was four of them sitting in the studio. I think a couple of days later, where they went into like, what wasn't he mean to you? Wasn't he rude to you? And Ricardo Sierra, exactly as Pete said, was like, no, he was quite polite. Yeah, it was shorter than usual. And I know why, but I didn't feel in any way belittled at all. Yes, but, you know, because we've got an agenda. It doesn't really matter that you're the interviewer and how you feel. We're asking how you feel so that we can say Pep is really stupid and rude. And therefore, when Pep came out to the Movistar, although I think it's pronounced Movistar here, but I love Movistar. When Pep came out and did his Arisco, he loves a barb. You know, if you give it to him in any way, whether it's a little bit, you know, hidden away in your words, or you have a pop at him, he'll have a pop back. He can't help it. I wouldn't disassociate myself from that. That tendency in life, I quite enjoy it. And really, to be honest with you, given what we were used to, all three of us in the Scottish Premier League or in the Premier League, you know, if you've made one of these belligerent British managers chippy, they'll have a right pop at you on or off mic or storm off. And Pip didn't do that, backing Pete's assertion that although he's a tough guy and an idiosyncratic guy who sometimes his nearest and dearest feel the same as Moby Star and Mark feel about him. And I have to close on Pete's think about pissing cologne, which I hope doesn't get bleeped out, Neil. We're leaving this with you. I'm not as colloquially good in Spanish as Peter is, not nearly. And therefore, a couple of years ago, it came to me as a big surprise when I was talking to John Toshack, who really doesn't like Rafa Benitez. And he said, and I won't do the big Welsh accent, but he said, well, they say over here, tienen un flor. And that means exactly as Peter said. It means you've got a flower where your arsehole should be and everything's smelling of rose. He doesn't have a flower. He's got a whole garden, he said, in terms of saying that Rafa was just lucky and nothing else. So Spanish language, eh?
Let's close our show with Andy Cochran, a social whose question is, as a Liverpool fan, this doesn't give me any joy to say, but it's going to be Madrid's Champions League again, isn't it? So let's use Andy's pessimism to close our Champions League semi-finals episodes by trying to come up with predictions. Graham, I know you always love this game, but let's make it more like analysis. What do the first legs tell us is likely to happen in the second legs? How about that? Make it a bit more scientific than just putting a pin on the donkey's tail.
I thought Madrid, despite the fact that the two teams served us up, just a reminder of why we are obsessed by football. It was an extraordinary experience to watch it, and it's nice to see Jake LaMotta, Defiance, Raging Bull was a hit for reasons beyond the soundtrack, and Pesci and De Niro, you know, this whole, he's on the ropes, the whole, you know, adventure industry in Hollywood is set up about our hero's down, it's so unfair, he's on the ropes, he's fighting back. And Madrid did that. They, you know, they wrote their own Hollywood script about being, you know, about to be taken to the cleaners, and they come away with a 4-3. They defended as badly as they did in the Clásico that they lost 4-0 to Barcelona at home. They were beyond atrocious. They were slow. They were lazy. Alaba's attempt to close down the ball in for the you could have put a pensioner on and done better than that. He danced round Gabriel Jesus to the goal line. Gabriel Jesus could do the one thing that opened the goal up for him and turn the other way anti-clockwise. Danny Carvajal, you know, when City score their fourth, I'm certain it was, when Zinchenko gets halved, as we used to say in Scottish football, by Cruz. Cruz and Carvajal and Militao and Courtois, which shocked me, kind of stop before the whistle's blown and go, well, that's a... Oh, it's not, you know. Nobody closed down, you know, there was a chance for Cruz and for Carvajal to close down Silva. And Courtois dropping his guard is the most unusual thing of all. So I thought that because of the glamour of the play and because of the heroic fight back from Madrid side that could have been dead and buried, I think in Spain most analytical work missed the fact that they were absolutely atrocious. And if you accumulate, for my taste, this is why, you know, plucky underdogs in the FA Cup. I've never liked all this butcher paper candlestick maker. Look, they've got a draw at Norwich. Shit, I couldn't give to, you know, to be. But like, no matter really, except in once in a million years exceptions, no matter how well the underdogs get battered and come back and sneak a win or whatever, they lose. They go out, you know, and Real Madrid have been utterly sincere. I want them to go into the final. You know, I always want Spanish clubs to win European trophies, always, unless they're playing the dandies. And I can still say that with a straight face. And the fact is, for what's 90 plus 60, Pete, is now, I don't 150 minutes of the Paris tie. You know, they're not only embarrassed, but they're 2-0 down, and it should have been 4 or 5. And then Donnarumma and Benzema, blah, blah. And just, that was an astonishing night, and I was thrilled for them, thrilled. And they played really well at Stamford Bridge, but at 2-1 with Chelsea having got their spurs on and jumped on the horse until Mondi throws in the third, it's going to be 2-2 or 3-2 Chelsea. In the second leg against Chelsea at home, they really could have been 6 down by the time Rodrigo makes it 3-1. They could have been, they go through, hats off. But, you know, they repeated a pattern against City, which is playing in a way that allows the opposition to have lots of fun near your goal. So, I hate myself for saying it because it's Madrid and because it's the Bernabeu, but I don't think it's a heartbreaker. And the one thing I'll say is that City didn't like the last 25 minutes at Leti. But can Madrid play like that for 90 minutes? I hate this act. I'm struggling to say it out loud, but I think it's City-Liverpool in Paris. I think. Come on, Madrid.
Pete, why don't you take the other tie? I mean, we've covered it a little bit, and I don't think either of you have that much optimism about a Villarreal comeback.
Get him in to tell me I'm talking garbage about the tie I've just talked about. If you've got a superior brain, unleash it. Unleash that, man.
The amazing thing about the first leg was Ancelotti set Madrid up as if they were playing Celta Vigo. I mean, they were 4-3-3, and they were getting absolutely butchered. And you could see it being 5 before half time. And in fairness to him, he then changed it. And I thought it went more 4-4-1-1, and Modric was behind Benzema, and Vinicius and Rodrigo had to be wide midfielders, which is not their strength. And so City stayed on top, you know, right until the latter stages of the second half. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to agree with Graham. If not for that incredible Vinicius goal, which not enough has been said about because the tie threw up so many other things. If not for that, and Laporte putting his hand up in the air, it would already be all over. There'll be all the pre-match, you know, there'll be 2 hours before kickoff outside the stadium to welcome the team bus, which then trundles through with blacked up windows so no one can see out or in any way, or no one can see in anyway. The atmosphere will be great, but City have got enough about them to ride that through. No one has won more games at the Bernabeu as a coach than Guardiola. So I'm afraid I go along with Graham, and I want Madrid to get there as well, because not a fan of, you know, finals between teams from the same league, with possible exception of the Madrid derby when that becomes a Champions League final. Always seems to be decent. The other tie, we've already said it's going to take a Gerard Moreno inspired miracle. I just hope they give a good account of themselves, Villarreal. I hope they entertain. I hope they shut a few people up who suggested that they're a nasty, negative, boring side.
Which brings us to the end of our first question and answer show for this month, dealing with the Champions League. We'll be back very soon with your questions concerning the rest of Spanish football. For now, thank you to the socios that sent in questions. If you'd like to be one of them, then you can join our merry gang at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Thank you, Pete Jensen. Thank you, Graham Hunter. And goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.